captain.
"Indeed, Miriam," Darius replied. Killian transited the OS Redemption into Oestus space. The Trident sailed alongside the rover, a mere 35 kilometers separating them.
"Too close for your preferences, Captain?" Killian asked Ellie when he noticed her frown.
"What if the rover's controller had erred in its settings, or the captain had chosen a different exit point?" Ellie asked.
"Your pardon, Captain. I eliminated potential errors by linking our ship's controller with the rover's. The new Terran captain might have thought he was responsible for the exit from Selus and the entry into Oestus, but he wasn't."
Ellie laughed at Killian's response.
"It's easy to see who you've spent too much time with, Killian. The man is a bad influence on you."
"I do enjoy the manner in which Dasada eliminates many of the superfluous discussions and bureaucratic processes around him," Killian replied, proud to be recognized as a close associate of Alex.
"Superfluous discussions. I must remember that one," Ellie replied.
"Contact Admiral Tripping, please, Killian."
"Captain Thompson," Morney replied cordially, "we're ready to take possession of whatever solution you're delivering to eliminate the probe."
"Killian, add Maria to this conference," Ellie sent.
"Envoy Gonzalez," Ellie said, giving Maria a heads-up as to the formal nature of the conversation.
"There seems to be some confusion as to who will manage the elimination of the probe. Captain Morney believes they will handle the operation."
"Hardly," Maria replied gruffly. She was one of the few individuals who didn't handle transit in and out of systems well, and she was in no mood to cater to a Tripping sycophant.
"Get me the Admiral, Captain," Maria ordered.
"The Admiral is indisposed at the moment, Envoy Gonzalez. I can tell you that Admiral Tripping has had extensive conversations with President Grumley and has cleared this exercise with him."
"Exercise?" Maria ground out.
"You call ridding our system of a dangerous alien probe that, when detonated, spreads a powerful energy wave that can destroy ships within 10 million kilometers or more, an exercise?"
"Perhaps that was an unfortunate choice of words, Envoy Gonzalez, but I can assure you that we have the capabilities to manage any process. We're merely requesting the Omnians to hand over their solution with whatever instructions that accompany it."
"Do you want their SAID, too, Captain?" Maria asked.
"I beg your pardon, ma'am?"
"You said you wanted the instructions, Captain. Who do you think will handle the exercise for the Omnians?"
"Perhaps you had best speak to Admiral Tripping, ma'am. I'll have him contact you when he wakes."
"Don't bother, Captain," Maria said, cutting her comm link.
Immediately, Maria placed a comm call to Government House, New Terra's residence for the President, located in the heart of the New Terra capital, Prima.
"Envoy Gonzalez, it's 4.85 hours in the morning. The President is asleep," the Government House comm operator replied.
"And I'm awake. Harold can join me," Maria growled.
"I'll contact security, ma'am. Please wait," the comm operator replied.
Maria fumed for nearly a quarter hour. She thought better of her desire to straighten out the Admiral at this hour of the morning, but it was too late now.
"Maria, what's happening?" the President asked, his voice nervous and slurred.
"My apologies, Harold. I should have waited until later. You know I don't handle transit too well."
"My sympathies, Maria. What's got you riled?"
"I thought I was clear in my message, Harold. Why does Captain Morney, quoting Admiral Tripping, believe they should handle the operation to remove the probe?"
"Ah, well, after Tripping located the probe, the fear level of the populace ratcheted incredibly. Tripping made the pronouncement over and over again that he and his crew would remove the probe. He said they were only waiting for some simple item from the Omnians, who were late in delivering it."
"Late? Why, that trumped-up little excuse for an officer," Maria fumed.
"I know, Maria," Harold replied, trying to clear his mind and think of a way to mollify her.
I've been under pressure from some Assembly members who want more separation between Herrikans and Omnians, but the majority have been in favor of closer ties.
Well, Harold, I tell you what. Maybe you should hear the Omnians' side of the story. I'll connect you with Captain Thompson of the Trident warship O.S. Redemption. She's the amenable sort.
Well, that's fine, Maria. I'm sure the captain and I can come to some agreement.
Before Harold Grumley could think through the implications of Maria's offer, the rover's controller linked him to Captain Thompson.
"Apologies for disturbing you so early in the morning, President Grumley," Ellie said graciously.
"These things happen, Captain. The price of leadership.
What would it take to transfer your technology to our Trident, Captain?"
"Actually, it could be accomplished fairly easily, Mr. President."
"Fine, Captain. When can you begin this process?"
"Oh, my apologies, Mr. President. You asked what it would take. You didn't ask whether I would do it."
Maria bit a finger to keep from laughing. If Grumley were more awake, he would have considered the possibility that any Omnian Trident captain would be someone who had been with Alex from the early days. Odds were good that they would be a Libran who were fierce supporters of Alex Racine and not easily dissuaded from following his directives.
"What's stopping you, Captain?" Harold asked.
"I've been ordered to remove the probe, Mr. President, my ship and no one else. This was supposedly made clear to you in your envoy's message."
"This is the Oistus system, Captain. As President, I have the right to overrule your Admiral's orders concerning any action you might take here."
"To be clear, President Grumley, it was Alex Racine who gave me these specific orders. Now, if you don't wish me to remove your nasty alien probe, that's your right. Killian, turn the ship about. We're headed home," Ellie ordered in a clear voice, winking at the Sade, who grinned at her.
"There's no need to be hasty, Captain. I'm sure that we can resolve this matter amicably, with a little effort on both our parts. Give me a moment, if you will, Captain."
Maria was close to biting through the skin on her knuckle. Even good politicians like Grumley were used to considering everything negotiable. Every one of them were required to learn at one point or another that Alex Racine and Admiral Tachenko weren't politicians. Grumley was wrapped in his dressing gown and seated behind his study's desk. He indicated to his comm operator, who was seated at a small console to the left of his desk, to silence the connection with the ships.
"Get me Admiral Tripping," Grumley ordered.
The comm operator located the controller code for the Jeffrey Orlan and sent the request.
"President Grumley, this is Captain Morney," came the response over the president's desk unit.
"Captain, I believe the request was for your admiral," Grumley replied.
"Yes, Mr. President, it was, but the admiral is asleep."
"So was I, Captain."
There was a pause before Morney caught on.
"I'll wake him, sir. Shall I calm you back?"
"I'll wait, but only briefly, Captain."
Morney turned to a second lieutenant and said, "Wake the admiral. Tell him the president is on the comm." The lieutenant hurried off as directed, loathing the captain's decision not to call the admiral on his reader. Whoever woke the admiral would receive a negative mark in his book.
"This is Admiral Tripping, Mr. President. Is there an emergency?"
Tripping was seated at his cabin's desk to take the call. He had been startled awake by a pounding at his door and wondered why he didn't receive the contact via his reader. A muffled voice spoke a message about the president on the comm, and in Tripping's hurry to answer the call, he forgot to ask the crew member to identify himself.
Odd that he didn't, Tripping thought.
"Of a sort, Admiral," Grumley replied. "You made a point of saying to one and all that Envoy Gonzalez's message was her opinion, and not to be taken as a directive from the Omnians. Captain Thompson has entered our system aboard the O.S. Redemption. She's stating unequivocally that you were directed to locate the probe and then stand aside. Your Captain Morney has stated otherwise to her."
"With all due respect to the Omnians, Mr. President, they continually overstate the importance of their role in matters."
"Do they, Admiral?"
"Continually, sir. It's frustrating at times."
"I take it you'd like to press for being the one to destroy the probe. Is that it, Admiral?" Grumley asked, beginning to realize what Maria was up against in attempting to guide the senior officer.
"It's a new Terran probe. It should be a new Terran ship that eliminates it," Tripping replied, congratulating himself on the pithy summary, considering that he'd just been woken from a deep sleep.
"And here I thought it was an alien probe. Silly me," Grumley replied.
Tripping swallowed with difficulty. His mouth had suddenly gone dry. Grumley was noted for resorting to humor when his patience was exhausted.
"Here's what you're going to do, Admiral. You contact Captain Thompson and give her the coordinates of the probe. Never mind that. Her Saeed probably already has them off your controller, if he or she hasn't found it by some other means. You be a good naval officer. Apologize for the confusion and stand aside. Do I make myself clear, Admiral, or do you wish me to address the assembly leaders when they convene today and request that they rescind your appointment?"
Tripping drew breath to object, but his comlight winked off. The President had cut the connection. Instead, the Admiral called the bridge.
"We've been ordered to stand down, Captain. Relay that message to Captain Thompson and follow her directions concerning where you should station our ship."
Tripping didn't give Morney an opportunity to reply. He cut the call and returned to bed, angry that a golden opportunity to promote his career had slipped through his hands. When Ellie received Captain Morney's brief message of acquiescence, she frowned.
"That was unexpected," she commented to Killian. "Perhaps it was due to the Admiral's conversation with the President," Killian replied.
"And how would you know about that, my nosy friend?"
"I thought it expedient to gather the probe's location from the Jeffrey Orland's controller and begin my calculations as to when would be the opportune time to intercept the probe. I might have lingered long enough to overhear the conversation of the President with the Captain and then with the Admiral."
"Imagine that," Ellie said in mock surprise. "The Saeed, who is to conduct this critical operation to destroy an alien probe, is so slow regarding communication that it takes him the length of two conversations to capture a tiny piece of data from a ship's controller."
"My excuse does seem far-fetched," Killian replied with a grin.
"That's your role model at work again, Killian," Ellie admonished. "Store those conversations with mine for the Admiral's review."
"Already done, Captain."
"Fine. Let's go kill an alien probe."
Chapter 14. Decision Time. After the OS Redemption returned to Celis, Ellie transferred her files to the Freedom and sent a link to Tatia. Immediately, she received a comm request.
"I didn't expect to find you up this late in the evening, Admiral," Ellie sent.
She detected Tatia's rapid breathing and could guess at her choice of exercise. It made her ache for Etienne's embrace.
"Good timing, Captain," Tatia sent.
Her thoughts were flushed with excitement.
"I can imagine, Admiral," Ellie replied, and the two women laughed.
"Success, Captain?" Tatia asked. "One alien probe destroyed. On contact by the Banisher, I might add," Ellie replied. "No harm to ships or stations. It was a clean job by Killian."
"It was the same for Darius. Detonation on contact, I mean. Any issues, Captain?"
"I uploaded some conversations that you should listen to, Admiral. Two of them were collected privately by Killian."
"Privately? That's a term I would expect to hear from Alex."
"Now you know the source of the influence, Admiral."
"Where's our new Terran Admiral? I would have expected him to be with you."
"He chose to give his crew an additional week to visit family and friends, Admiral."
"When you make orbit, Captain, I want you and your crew to take 2 weeks of rest. I'll have a watch crew for your ship to free everyone."
"And after that?" Ellie asked.
"It will be Alex's decision, but you and I can probably guess what that will be."
Tatia briefly joined Alain in the refresher before she went to her study and listened to Ellie's recordings.
"Revealing, aren't they?" Tatia heard in her implant when she finished the last one.
"This is getting creepy, Alex. How do I know you're not listening to me any time you want?"
She heard the sound of Alex and Renee's laughter.
"Now I'm group entertainment?"
"Tatia, be at ease," Renee sent.
"Julian queued us of Ellie's upload, and Alex and I listened to the conversations at the same time you did. We finished, and moments later Julian said you had closed the last file."
"The only thing I did differently, Tatia," Alex said, "was to send you my thought without pinging you."
"You're a little unsettled, Tatia. Were you involved in something that you hoped to keep private? Something personal, something intimate?" Renee asked.
Tatia could hear Renee's snickers.
"The two of you are going to have to seek your fun elsewhere," Tatia growled, and she heard Alex and Renee break into laughter.
"Okay, to business, Tatia," Alex sent, and Tatia could feel the power under his thought. "Two probes that were still broadcasting exploded on contact."
"I think that's the reaction we should expect as the norm going forward," Tatia replied.
"I'm in agreement, although I would have loved to capture one."
"That might never happen, Alex. These probes underline Miriam's surmises about the Nual civilization, and let me admit that it's frightening to say that."
"Agreed. I always thought of the Nual as tightly confined to a small homeworld and desperate to get off by building a sphere. Thinking of them that way made it easier to cope with the threat. Now, considering they might be a civilization that has been expanding for tens of thousands of years, if we can extrapolate from the probe saturation, scares me too."
"Does it change your mind about hunting the second sphere?" Tatia asked.
"Would it change your mind, Tatia?" Alex riposted.
"No," Tatia answered simply. "The more you know about your opponents, the quicker you can defeat them," she sent, falling back on a phrase she used repeatedly while training her TSF troopers.
"That's the way I feel. Hiding from the threat would mean certain ruination of every intelligent species in our corner of the galaxy, as the Nual discovered their expanding technological power."
"On to a more pleasant subject, Alex. You reviewed the communication between Ellie and Morny and between Grumley and Tripping."
"Unfortunately, I did."
"He's dangerous, Alex."
"Agreed, Tatia, but he hasn't crossed the line yet."
"I'm afraid when he does, Alex, he'll take a great many people with him."
"Mitigate his role, Tatia. After we locate and destroy or capture the second sphere, I think we'll disband our liaison with the NT Tridents."
"Let's revisit one of the words you just used, Alex."
"Which one?" Alex asked.
"Capture," Tatia replied.
"Well, what do you suggest we do, Tatia, if the sphere surrenders?"
"My first thought is that I hope that doesn't happen. My second thought is that I wonder how we're supposed to recognize when it does. Is it going to host a giant, stiff white flag?"
"I guess we'll discover that if and when it happens." "I'll let you return to your, activities," Alex said.
He discovered that Tatia's reply to his final comment was an abrupt ending of the comlink. He chuckled, slipped deeper into the bedclothes, and Renee wrapped around him.
"Theodore informs me that tests of the Vanishers were successful at Herrikan and New Terra, although the probes blew up on contact," Gino said, as he took a seat at the head table with Alex and many others. Alex eyed Gino while he picked up his mug and took a deep swallow of his tea. Then he resumed his morning meal.
"There will be a brief interruption in your conversation, Council Leader Gino Diamante, while food is consumed to a satisfactory level. Do remember the caloric needs of new Terrans," Julian sent privately to Gino. Before Gino could send a response to Julian, Katrina took a seat next to him and said, "Did you ask yet?"
"We eat first," Gino replied. Katrina was about to object, but Gino's private message stopped her. I already made the mistake of interrupting Alex's meal. It didn't go over too well. Servers surrounded the new individuals at the table and took their orders, and the only sounds to be heard for a while were the clinks of utensils, dishes, cups, and pitchers. When Alex's dishes, the last on the table, were removed, he said, "Yes, Gino, the tests were successful. No damage to life or property in either case. As far as we're concerned, the banishers have proven themselves ready to deploy. You'll find they'll be a great deal easier, more efficient, and portable than rocks," Alex added, smiling. "Yes, well, you use what you have at hand. How many of these can I order, Alex?" Alex glanced at Julian, who immediately recovered the list of parts and construction time to produce a single banisher. He was getting quite accomplished at this process, having done it for a variety of ships now. This one was easy. After estimating the total cost, Julian added a surcharge for profit and a codicil that the Meridians were responsible for transport. Alex received Julian's summary, shared it with Gino, and said, "That's my accountant's proposal for the purchase of a banisher. Concerning the quantity, you can order as many as you would like." Gino glanced at Julian. During the brief moment he had regarded Alex, he discovered the Sade had adorned his head with a fedora. "A more than fair figure, Alex. My appreciation to your accountant," Gino replied, winking at Julian. "How about 100 banishers?" 100 it is, Gino," Alex replied, reaching across the table and gently shaking the Meridian's slender hand. "The orbital platform will begin construction on your order, and you'll be notified when you can pick up the first shipment." "In which case, we'll be leaving this morning, Alex. I have my work cut out for me to convene the council and present our agreement for ratification. And you, what will you be doing in the meantime?" "Why, Gino, I thought you knew," Renee said cheerfully. "We're going sphere hunting. Would you like to join us?" Gino and Katrina stared aghast at Renee, who wore an expectant expression. "All of you are beginning to sound more and more like Alex every time we see you," Katrina said, shaking her head in disbelief at the offer. "It's a requirement of our offices," Julian explained. "You have to be a little disturbed to follow Alex."
"But you should know, Katrina, that in reality I'm the sane one," Alex added. However, the odd grin and wide-eyed expression he extended her conveyed something entirely different. Gino and Katrina burst out laughing. "Come, my partner," Gino said, standing and offering a hand to Katrina. "I think it's best we leave soonest. This mental aberration might be catching."
The Meridians said their goodbyes and left for the Freedom's Bay levels. "Are they serious about chasing that second sphere?" Katrina asked as they walked along a corridor to a lift.
"Oh, yes. Alex and his people might sound as if it's a jest, but they're deadly serious."
"And when they catch it?" Katrina asked.
"They'll destroy it, or it will destroy them."
"You make the possible outcomes sound so simple."
"They are simple, but one of them would be a great tragedy."
Olawale Wambo, an Earther refugee who was now governing the Dishnya's new school, caught a transport from the planet and lifted for the Freedom. He had an urgent appointment with Alex, who met him as he exited his traveler. "Everything okay with the Dishnya?" Alex asked as they entered the corridor from the bay's airlock.
"Oh, yes, the Dishnya are fine," Olawale replied, as Alex guided him toward a lift. "I wanted to talk to you about Saul."
"Saul?" Alex asked, perplexed by the choice of subject.
"Alex, my people have no concept of the Nual Sphere, especially of its insidious nature. They're as likely to welcome it as attack it, and we're responsible for that."
"I don't follow you, Olawale," Alex replied. The lift took them to the city ship's Grand Park, and the two men strolled through its pleasant gardens.
Prior to our arrival, my people had no extensive contact with anyone outside the Sol system. Yes, the Tribunal and a few select others heard the stories that were told by Captain Lumley and his crew, who returned on the Explorer ship from our space. But our arrival was proof of the existence of others beyond Sol. And look what we did.
I thought we helped them and United Earth's crumbling society, Alex replied.
We did, and that's my point, Alex.
Ah, I see what you mean. Because of our visit, their experience with outsiders was a positive one. So if a sphere were to arrive, they would think that the proper approach would be to act as gracious hosts.
Exactly. And how devastating would that be?
I take it that you want to make a trip to Sol? Alex asked.
Yes, Oluwole replied.
Okay, Oluwole, but I can't spare a warship. At this rate, I might be short one and a new Terran admiral. You'll have to take the Reaver, in which case Captain Lumley, as a fellow Earther, will be a good man to have at the helm. I'll load the liner with travelers and two banishers. You'll need a Sade. Do you have a preference?
I don't suppose I could take Julian, Oluwole asked.
When Alex stared at him with flat, hard eyes, Oluwole chuckled.
Apologies, Alex. Perhaps my jest wasn't as humorous as I thought. Please choose one for me.
How about any of your Earther scientists? Will they be traveling with you? Alex asked.
In fact, Alex, they aren't interested in making the trip. As a group, we thought Sol should be warned, but that takes only one of us. Besides, it's important to keep the Dishnia's school open. The Sades and an engineering team are building a new addition and we're adding new courses. Two of the Confederation Sades are now acting as educators.
What type of courses? Alex asked, curious as to the direction of the Dishnia's interests.
They're courses for the younger Dishnia. They're fascinated by our technology, power crystals, comm systems, implants, nanites, all of it.
What do the queens think of that? Alex asked.
The usual responses. The older ones snuff and snort their disapproval. The younger ones cheer them on.
How are Edmus and Jodlin doing? Alex asked. Alex was referring to a pair of Earther orphans that Z had adopted from Idona Station. Edmus had studied engineering at Asperos University after having worked for years as a teenager with Z and Claude, creating the Sade's raft of avatars. He was a brilliant engineer in his own right and helped to discover the faux shell process. Jodlin, also an engineer, was Edmus's partner and the level-headed one of the pair.
I understand their new business is doing exceedingly well, Alex. With their income from Omnia ships, they started a flip business. The little machines are quite a success for the growing city.
Have there been any issues? Alex asked, with concern for the use of the sporty, single-or-tandem rider-grav units.
You're speaking of possible overflights of the green. Z constructed the algorithms for the controller's mapping. The flits are restricted to the planes within the Omnia City's continent. Flights over the green or oceans are impossible unless someone figures out how to break through the controller's encryption.
Alex grinned. If they could, every Omnian Sade would know it in an instant.
There's that, Oluwole laughed, his bright white teeth shining in his dark face.
More than anything, Alex was worried that human curiosity might lead the foolish to investigate the deadly swaths of forests north and south of the Midland Plains. Z had ventured into the green to investigate the possibility of it harboring an intelligent species. What he found was a vicious environment of flora and fauna that competed for survival every moment of every day. And the most dangerous species was the Nascosto, a troop of chameleon-capable, venomous tree-dwellers. Z's Cedric Broussard suit was the only reason he survived his time in the green. "I'll speak to Edmus and Jodlin," Alex said. "I think they should accompany you."
"As you wish, Alex. I'll get started on the preparations."
"Before you go, Oluwole, hear me well. You travel to Sol, communicate to whoever is in charge,
and gain permission to search the system for a probe. If you find one, destroy it, and then sail back here immediately. No extended visit. Am I clear?
Absolutely, Alex. It wasn't my intention to sit down and have some long-winded chats.
Be safe, Oluwole.
We'll be careful, Oluwole said, rising from the bench where the two men had sat to talk. And thank you, Alex, Oluwole added, grabbing Alex in a bear hug.
He was one of the few individuals who could manage that. Though not as heavy as Alex, Oluwole was taller and a big man.
Say hello to Nikki and Patrice if you get the opportunity, Alex called out as Oluwole walked away, referring to Nikki Fowler and Patrice Morris, two antagonists, a rebel leader and a militia lieutenant, who chose to bury their animosities and work to rebuild Saul's Idona station. Oluwole waved his acknowledgement, a smile lighting his face.
"And may the stars watch over you," Alex said with quiet intensity. He watched Oluwole disappear along a path and waited for passing impressions of the Earther's impending return to Saul. Alex might deny the insinuations of others about his premonitions, but he had lived with them too long to ignore them. The reason he refused to own up to having the unlikely impressions was that he felt the admittance would separate him even further from his fellow humans.
"Julian, I need a recommendation for a Sade," Alex sent. "Oluwole will be taking the Reaver to Saul and searching for a probe."
"Who will be accompanying him besides Captain Lumley?" Julian sent in reply.
"None of the other Earther scientists. I'll be asking Edmus and Jodlin to travel with him if they can get away from their flit business."
"The pair have been working closely with a Confederation Sade named Esteban. They've made him a partner in their business, Gravmania. You might suggest he accompany them, and I can prepare Esteban to handle the probe search and manage the deployment of the Banisher. There are several engineers and Sades, the company's parts suppliers, who would be willing to oversee the final assembly and delivery of the flit orders while the threesome is gone."
"Thank you, Julian," Alex said, switching his comlink to Cordelia.
"Greetings, Alex. I'll inform Francis of his mission. What do you wish to have his ship carry?"
Alex smiled, always impressed at the speed of Sade communication. "Francis will need travelers and two banishers. I'll request Edmus, Jodlin, and Esteban travel with Oluwole. Get Tatia's recommendations for traveler pilots. Francis will need good fighter pilots with cool heads."
"Understood, Alex. Anything else?"
"Edmus and Jodlin, Cordelia, please."
"What's this about you two selling flits to the Dishnia?" Alex demanded when Cordelia connected him to the pair.
There was a dead silence on the call while the two young people tried to figure out how to respond.
"Apologies, you two. I was kidding," Alex said.
"Don't do that, Alex," Jodlin hotly replied. "I'm too young to have a stroke or something."
"Good one, Alex," Edmus said, chuckling. "I was trying to figure out who was buying and reselling our flits across the waters. Then it dawned on me that the Dishnia don't have any credits. They're still on the barter system."
"Quick thinking, Edmus," Alex replied.
"Now that you two foolish men are done congratulating yourselves, what was it you wanted, Alex?"
"Oluwole wants to warn Saul about the Nual spheres and check the system for a probe."
"Does he intend to stay for a while?" Jodlin asked.
Alex could hear the trepidation in Jodlin's thoughts.
"Negative, Jodlin. He has my directive to take care of business and return."
"Is he traveling aboard a Trident?" Edmus asked.
"No, the Reaver."
"And the reason for your calm, Alex?" Jodlin sent.
"I'm asking the two of you to accompany him. In addition, the ship needs a Sade to help with the probe's location and the Banisher's deployment. I was told that Esteban might be a good choice."
Alex waited. Obviously, the two partners were in a deep discussion, which probably included Esteban.
"We're worried about our business, Alex," Edmus said after resuming the connection.
"A competitor is starting a flit business, and we don't want to lose our customers."
And if I arrange to have some of your suppliers manage the final assembly, delivery, and sales for you while you're gone?
I don't see them doing that for free, Alex, Jodlin replied. They might require some incentive.
Alex chuckled to himself. Jodlin was not only the level-headed one of the pair, she was also the business-minded one. Omnia ships will ensure the individuals who manage your affairs while you're gone are adequately compensated.
In that case, we're happy to help Oluwale, Alex, Jodlin replied joyfully. We'll coordinate with Francis for launch.
And Esteban? Alex asked.
He's aboard, Edmus replied.
After Alex ended the comm, Jodlin yipped in pleasure and threw herself into Edmus's arms.
This is going to be a fantastic trip to see what's become of Saul, she said.
Well negotiated, sir, Esteban said. The Confederation Sade's synth skin was patterned in a subtle flow of what appeared to be waves of water, with blues, greens, and occasional white peaks. Some humans who stared too long at him could feel a little nauseous, something akin to seasickness. Jodlin released Edmus and narrowed her eyes at Esteban.
Apologies. That was well negotiated, Jodlin, Esteban replied, correcting her address in his comment.
That's better, Jodlin replied, hugging Esteban. The Sade had received many such attentions from the pair of engineers who had hired him and soon afterward given him a minority share in their business. The initial handshakes of Edmus and hugs from Jodlin were confusing, but the more he understood the genuine warmth that the two humans exhibited, the more he coveted their attentions to him. If the pair were going to Saul, he intended to accompany them to ensure their well-being.
"Do you think we finally got the better of Alex?" Jodlin asked.
She looked at Edmus's flat expression before she added, "Probably not."
"But you held up our end," Edmus said, throwing an arm around her shoulders.
Chapter 15 Farewells. "I'm not waiting any longer for Admiral Tripping, Tatia," Alex sent one morning. He had awakened, enjoyed a stint in the refresher, and checked the dispositions of tridents through the Freedom's controller. The squadron was still one ship short.
"When do we leave, Alex, and do we take the other two new Terran tridents or send them home?"
Tatia sent in reply.
"How do you feel about the two remaining captains, Tatia?"
"Both are solid. If we took them, I'd make Jagelski the senior captain."
"Then we take them. We leave at 8.5 hours, 2 days from now."
"We'll be ready, Alex." As it was, the N.T. Jeffrey Orlan arrived in system late that afternoon, and Tatia reached out to the warship.
"Captain Morney," Tatia said, speaking to him via the Freedom's bridge comm system.
"Please connect me to Admiral Tripping."
"I'm here, Admiral Tachenko," Tripping replied.
"I'd like a private conversation, Admiral," Tatia said.
"I'm comfortable speaking in front of my captain and officers. As new Terrans, we exhibit solidarity. Or have you forgotten that?" Tripping replied, with his usual condescending tone.
Tatia took a deep breath, blew it out, and relaxed her clenched fists. Alex's words surfaced. "Let Tripping trap himself."
"I understood you would be returning to Omnia within a week, Admiral. It has been nearly 2 weeks. Did you experience difficulties with your ship?"
"Quite the contrary, Admiral. My crew and I enjoyed a longer period of relaxation on our home planet. However, we're here and ready to join your practice deployments."
"Maneuvers are over, Admiral. The squadron is deploying at 8.5 hours in another day and a half."
Tatia could detect a whispered conversation between Tripping and one other person.
"I'm informed, Admiral, that we can't reach Omnia in that time. Perhaps you can delay your departure for 2 more days.
Tripping's voice had undergone a noticeable shift. Gone was the hauteur, replaced by a tentativeness.
"That's a shame, Admiral. It looks as if I'll be taking the other two new Terran tridents with me on the hunt."
You might as well turn around and report to President Grumley that your extended vacation caused you to miss our sailing date.
Around Tatia, Cordelia and her crew grinned at her, and Tatia had to admit she enjoyed twisting Tripping's tail.
"I'll remind you that I'm the new Terran senior officer," Tripping declared hotly. "Those ships are mine. You can either wait for me, or I'll forbid the captains to sail with you."
Tatia had been waiting for this moment. Tripping had neatly stepped into a trap of his own making.
"Let me clear up a few misconceptions you have, Admiral. The 3NT Tridents aren't yours. They belong to your government, which signed an agreement obligating you and your captains to follow my commands. If you order the new Terran captains to disregard my lawful commands, you're abrogating the agreement outright, and that means that I can remove you from command of the NT Tridents."
Again, Tatia picked up muted sounds of whispers. She suspected it was Tripping and Morny discussing the validity of her argument.
"We seem to be at an impasse, Admiral. Do you have a suggestion as to how to proceed?"
"Your controller will have received coordinates from Captain Cordelia. She's marked an interception point. Proceed there immediately, and you'll catch the squadron before we exit the system."
"That works for me, Admiral."
"One more thing, Admiral Tripping. Don't ever challenge my authority again or threaten to divert your captains from following their duties. I won't give you a second chance."
Tripping was considering his reply when Captain Morny cued him that the comlink had been cut by Admiral Tuchenko. The day before the fleet's launch to hunt the Olassa Sphere, Alex and Renee took the opportunity to visit many of Omnia's sites. In 4 years, the planet's plains had changed in extraordinary ways. With the fighter squadron enjoying time off, it was Franz Cohen who snatched the opportunity to pilot Alex and Renee around for the day and view the planet up close. He set the traveler down on the bluff overlooking the hive of Wave Skimmer. The Sui Sui was chosen as the first of several hives, which had combined to construct an enormous enclave against the face of a cliff. After exiting the shuttle, Alex let loose an ear-splitting whistle. Renee, Franz, and he heard a resounding reply from hundreds of Sui Sui voices along the beach, out in the waters, and from the cliff-clinging domiciles. The response had Alex laughing delightedly, and Renee and Franz smiled at his antics. The threesome worked their way down the cliff path, which the Sui Sui had cut and fastidiously maintained, mostly for their human visitors. As they stepped onto the beach, Wave Skimmer, who had been called to shore by other males and was dripping seawater from his search, whistled his greeting to Alex. Alex thumped the huge claws of the first, who returned the greeting. Despite Renee's love of the Harrican Sui Sui, she found the Omnian Sui Sui intimidating. Wave Skimmer's massive claws were each as great as Alex's chest, and on extended legs the adult male stood a full meter taller than Alex. There was nothing in Wave Skimmer's demeanor that indicated he was anything but an intelligent, gentle giant. "But he's so big," she thought, grappling with her anxiety. On the other hand, Alex either had no concerns or he hid them well. After Alex's greeting with Wave Skimmer, the two began walking or scuttling, as in the case of the Sui Sui, down the beach. They whistled their chat like two old friends. At one point, Wave Skimmer abruptly halted and turned to face Alex, who communicated to the Sui Sui for several moments. When the first's sudden pause was noticed, the action along the beach froze. The hives stood still to hear what the Star Hunter First was saying. "We've found a second world traveler," Alex whistled, using the Sui Sui term for the Nual Sphere. "We will search for it." "Dangerous," Wave Skimmer warbled. He feared for the Star Hunter First and his people. "The world traveler is wounded. It will be an easy hunt," Alex whistled, tweeting his derision of the sphere's ability to defend itself. "When?" Wave Skimmer asked. "When the sky lightens tomorrow, my ships will sail and start the search," Alex replied.
"The hives will think of you on the search. Come, Star Hunter First.
I will show you our hive's pride." Wave Skimmer led Alex along a long stretch of sand to where several youngsters were splashing in the shallow waves. He whistled lightly, and a young female broke away from the group and raced up to the first. She slid to a halt, tweeting a greeting to the first. "Greet the Star Hunter first, young one," Wave Skimmer invited. The youngster issued a brief tweet, which Alex gracefully accepted. However, Wave Skimmer's four eye stalks bent down to examine the young female, and hers drooped in concern. "That is the best you can do for the human who has brought us peace? Greet and celebrate him as it should be. On the following day he goes to search for the hive's greatest enemy, and if he fails he might never be seen again." The two-year-old Sui Sui gathered her courage and lifted her torso on spindly legs. From deep in her genetic memory came the desire to celebrate the Sui Sui's friend and protector. She sang in her high, clear voice, with purpose, composing her little verses on the fly. At the end of her song, her voice turned sweet and soft, as she wished Star Hunter First a long life. Renee whistled her amazement. "Wave Hunter! The people have a hive singer!" The first rose on his legs and whistled loudly in celebration, the hive joining in. Alex chuckled and reached down to pick up the youngster. The two warbled softly to each other before the young female tweeted, "Slide me." She folded her legs tightly under her, and Alex obliged by walking to the water's edge. With a tremendous heave, he threw the youngster, spinning across the shallow waters. Her high-pitched scream of pleasure waved in and out as she spun in a dizzying pattern. "Congratulations," Alex said to Wave Skimmer, smacking the giant Sui Sui's claws. Alex, Renee, and Franz turned around and headed for the cliff trail, while the hive continued to celebrate the sharing of their wonderful discovery. It was Wave Skimmer who was silent, his four eye stalks focused on the humans. "Successful search, Star Hunter First," the Sui Sui thought. Alex, Renee, and Franz gained the traveler, and she said to Franz, "I want to see Omnia City next." Franz piloted the traveler across the ocean to Omnia's second continent, where humans and Saids had created their first city, which bore the planet's name. When they landed, blue synth-skinned Trixie was there to greet them. She stood beside the city's first four-seat grav car. "These are similar to what we enjoyed on Harrican," Renee marveled. "Gravmania's newest product. I've been chosen to test drive this initial version," Trixie replied. "And promote Edmus Jodlin and Esteban's business as you flit around the city," Alex added.
"Promotion and commerce, they go hand in hand, do they not, Dasada?"
"That's true, Trixie," Alex replied.
The Sade and the three humans loaded into the grav car. Alex sat in the back with Franz so that Renee could enjoy the better view. As they lifted, Renee twisted around to eye the rear seat. "I do have a minor suggestion for Gravmania," she said. Trixie glanced behind her.
"Yes, sir, I see what you mean. Either Gravmania makes a larger vehicle, or we can't allow two new Terrans to ride together in the back seat."
Alex and Franz grinned at each other. Their shoulders were tightly compressed together. Trixie dropped elevation, slowed the grav car, and retracted the clear canopy. It allowed the men to extend an arm outside the vehicle and gain some room. As she flew, she gave the humans a running commentary.
"The city is growing so fast," Renee said.
"The Foshell technology is at the center of it all, sir. Investment in support industries is growing rapidly. Despite that, demand is outpacing supply. It has the positive aspect of bringing humans and Saids alike to Omnia. Even the Nual are contributing to growth."
"The Nual?" Renee exclaimed.
"Now that Dasada's query has led to the discovery of probes in every system that has been searched, there are new industries providing the means of destroying them. We're fabricating parts for more than 100 banishers, even now. And we expect to receive orders from other systems to support the manufacture of some of the more esoteric parts of Tridents
travelers, and scout ships. This industrial growth is in addition to traveler manufacture, which is ongoing.
What of the Dishnya, Trixie? Alex asked.
An interesting query, Alex. I visited with some of the queens 6 days ago. There are subtle schisms growing between the nests. The eldest queens want little change but are grateful for their structures, which provide them much comfort. The younger queens are anxious for their young soma to embrace the new technologies. Those young attend school and fervently wish to become part of the spacefaring opportunity.
When do you think they'll be ready, Trixie?
Not surprising you ask when and not if, Dasada. I would expect to see the desire of the young ones manifest in some form of demand to their queens within the next 3 to 5 years.
What about introducing them to aspects of this city? Alex asked.
This has been proposed and discussed, Dasada. What we do not envision is how to integrate them into our world. We are certain that if they visit the city, they will want to stay, and we're concerned for the creation of something similar to Sadesville.
At the mention of the tiny, poorly outfitted enclave of Sades, who were the first to immigrate to Harrican from the Confederation, Alex winced.
Let me think on it, Trixie. I'll see if I can't come up with a means of eliminating that problem when the Dishnya are ready to join Omnian society.
Well said, Trixie, Hector sent. I'll inform the others that Alex is working on a solution.
By the way, Trixie, say hello to Hector for me.
The electric blue face turned to Alex, and her mouth split into a wide smile.
Dasada, you know us too well.
When Alex, Renee, and Franz finished their aerial tour of the city, they said goodbye to Trixie, who hugged each of them.
May the stars protect you, Trixie whispered in Alex's ear.
Last stop, Nislara's compound, Alex said to Franz as they boarded the traveler. After a short flight over the waters to the Dishnya continent, Franz announced,
Alex, you have a welcoming committee.
Alex and Renee picked up the controller's view of the ground.
Imagine that, Renee commented.
Looks like the entire Dishnya Soma turned out.
Alex eyed Renee, who maintained an indifferent expression on her face.
Set us down where you can, Franz, Alex requested.
The trappings of the waiting queens were evident at the rim of the vast body of Dishnya. Franz headed there and chose a spot 20 meters in front of them. Alex, Renee, and Franz stepped from the traveler, and Nislara's young heir, Nephis, broke from the crowd and raced forward on her long, slender legs. Despite her small 1 meter stature, she covered the ground quickly and jumped into Renee's waiting arms. Hoisting the young heir up, Renee received a wet tongue in the ear for her efforts. It was a sentiment of pups who had yet to learn the manners of adult Dishnya.
"You're growing so quickly, Nephis," Renee complimented her.
"You go?" Nephis asked as Renee sat her on the ground. It was a sign of the changes in Dishnya society that the pups were bilingual.
"Yes, Nephis, I have told you this," Nislara said as she approached the humans.
Her command of the human tongue was limited, but she kept working at it.
"Stay," Nephis pleaded, but a soft growl from Nislara had the youngster backing behind her matriarch.
The queens of the Dishnya nests stepped forward to array themselves beside Nislara.
"Dasata, Ine, and Fans," Nislara said, greeting the humans.
Her snout, sharp rows of teeth, and long tongue managed the last two names as best they could.
"We understand you leave on the sky's new light to hunt your enemy," Nislara said in her native language,
which the Omnians could translate with their implant software. And Alex nodded his agreement.
"You take warriors?" Homsaf asked.
One of the rare young queens, Homsaf trained with many of the battle-scarred Wasats and senior warriors under Myron McTavish, commandant of the Dishnya Military Training Academy.
"No, Homsaf. We hunt the enemy in our ships. We land on no worlds. Some day Dishnya warriors fight with Omnians, and some day Dishnya will crew starships,
"'But not today,' Alex replied in the Dishnya tongue.
It always surprised other humans how fast Alex adopted an alien language, not only their words but their speech pattern and mannerisms. In this case, Alex started with his hand, palm up but low, before he swung it gently to the side, a Dishnya sign of negation.
"'Dasata promises this?' Homsaf asked.
"'It's not in my power to promise this, but I see it happening,' Alex replied. Homsaf dipped her muzzle in acceptance, though she was disappointed. She felt her warriors were ready to fight with Dasata and his kind, despite being unable to envision the circumstances under which that would happen.
"'No warrior,' Nefes huffed from behind Nislara's powerful legs.
"'What would Nefes be when she is queen?' Rene asked.
"'Nefes flies starship,' the heir replied, stepping into the open and pointing at the sky.
Alex was struck by the accuracy of Trixie's analysis. The Dishnya young had received a taste of a better life, having crawled out of their dim tunnels to inhabit Omnian-designed and built structures. Now they wanted more than a communal existence of bartering on the dusty plains. They wanted what the Omnians had. Alex raised a hand high in the air, saluting the Dishnya, and the Soma tilted their muzzles to the sky and howled as one. The harmony of thousands of voices dominated the plains. When the Dishnya salute died, Nislara stepped close to Alex. Long gone were the admonitions of Wasatz that it was dangerous for queens to close on one not of the nest.
"'There are no words, Dasata,' Nislara said, her muzzle mere centimeters from Alex's face, her eyes boring into his. "'You and your people have fulfilled my dreams for the Dishnya beyond what I could have imagined. Know that the entire body of Sawa Mesasoma send their wishes for your safe return.'
On a final note, Nislara slipped her muzzle to the side of Alex's head, and a long tongue curled around his ear. When she pulled away, she barked her laughter as Alex grinned at her. Alex raised his hand once more as the three humans turned to board the traveler. When the hatch closed, it silenced the tremendous howls of the Dishnya.
"'Everyone is entirely too sentimental today,' Franz said as the threesome made their way forward. "'You'd think they believed we can't handle a nearly unarmed sphere. It's like they aren't expecting us to return.'
Rene had taken a seat, but Alex noticed that Franz had stopped and was waiting for a response from him. It was the specter of Alex's premonitions. He realized that the emotional farewells had unsettled his fighter group leader, which wasn't good, but Alex didn't have an image beyond the one he had shared that he sensed there had been other spheres than the one at Libra, which had proven to be true.
"'We will take the necessary steps to trap and confront the Nual without unduly risking our people, Franz. Be assured of that,' Alex said.
Franz accepted the answer and hustled to the pilot's cabin. When Alex sat beside Rene, she took his hand in both of hers, squeezed tightly, and then leaned back into her seat to be alone with her thoughts.
Chapter 16 Return to Olasa. The Trident squadron and scout ships rendezvoused with Tripping's ship before exiting the system, and the N.T. Jeffrey Orlan assumed its place in formation. The five Omnian ships formed a wedge, and Tripping chafed that his tridents were relegated to positions behind the wedge. Killian and his companions had received their new scout ship, Vivian's Mirror, in time to test the vessel and announce it ready for service. The other five scout ships had completed their assigned search patterns and returned in time to accompany the squadron on the hunt. After a long transit, the fleet exited into the Olasa system. The Sades initiated the search for a probe, focusing on the broadcast signal. Immediately they detected a strong signal and others that ranged from faint to barely detectable. Having determined there was a probe monitoring the worlds of light, Alex ordered the Vivian's Mirror forward.
Killian, locate Scarlet Mandator. My thought is that the Mandator will be aboard a ship instead of on the Olasa homeworld. Take up a station abreast of the Mandator's ship so that we can have quick communication.
Affirmative, Dasada, Killian sent in reply, and the scout ship closed its clamshell rear to enclose its drive engines and convert to grav